And then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Ramel Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, they're personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. Whether you get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm has you covered. They're going to work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. So get that representation you need at the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They are proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. I will say this about John and his firm. They support the game of soccer on the air. They will have you covered. And we all, at times when we get in accidents, we do need representation. Do it with John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, the big news for the Dynamo in the offseason was the hiring of Tab Ramos, the former under-20 national team coach, assistant to Jurgen Klinsmann, also an outstanding playing career that goes on and on and on. I set out to do an interview with him that would take you into some parts of his history and soccer journey that maybe you don't know about. Here is part one of Tab Ramos, the new Houston Dynamo manager. So just tell me about the Montevideo, Uruguay connection. You were born there. You played youth soccer there. How much of that do you recollect, and how influential has that been in your life?
I remember everything. You know, I actually don't have a good memory, but that part of my life was so important to me because soccer was so important. So in Uruguay, I played what they call baby football, which is football between the ages of 6 and 12, and I pretty much played, you know, every age group in between there. And it's so important. Because, you know, if you think about the way sort of soccer operates in the U.S., where, you know, we talk about, you know, not being too competitive too early and being careful with being focused on results too early. You know, in Uruguay, you're literally playing derbies against a team across the road that you have to win already at 7 and 8 years old. I mean, these are games you have to win because the fields are packed with parents all the way around who want to win the game. So my recollection is how tough it was to play the games at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Tab Ramos, new coach of the Houston Dynamo, joining us. So then, your dad, former professional soccer player, how influential has he been with you when it comes to the sport of soccer? Because we know the influence of fathers.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was very much involved. You know, he was an electrical engineer, but at the same time, he was helping with the fourth division team at Huracan in Montevideo. So he was very involved in the game. He tried to teach me as much as he could, and he was obviously at all my games.
Kearney, New Jersey, that's where he ended up landing, in a very good soccer area, as we all know. John Horks, you and John kind of tied at the hip?
Yeah, so I was very lucky to move, of all places in the country. I ended up moving to Harrison, Kearney area in the U.S., where there was a big influence of, you know, sort of immigrants who brought the game really early on to the U.S. So I got on Thistle FC in Kearney. John Harkes happened to be there. John's dad coached the team where I played. And John and I have been great friends ever since, and I think we've had sort of parallel careers. You know, he went to England, I went to Spain. We both played on the national team pretty much around the whole same time. And yeah, I mean, it's a great friend and a lot of respect for what he's given back to the game, and even more for the type of player that he was, because I think now that I've watched what's happened with U.S. soccer over the last, you know, 5-8 years, I start to realize how good our teams earlier were.
Yeah, former U.S. international Tab Ramos joining us here, and of course we're going to intervene all the time and mention that because this is also having aired on the radio. St. Benedict's Precht obviously has a tremendous sort of reputation as a high school soccer place. So you get tied into them as well. I also found out you ran track.
Oh, well, I don't know how you found that out, but yes.
St.
Benedict's was a very important part of my life. You know, Father Edwin is the headmaster there still, and he was there when I was there. And he played a big role in me really being able to get all my papers done and everything to get on the national team quickly. It was a school that at the time had not won a state championship in decades since they won in football, I think in the 50s or 60s. And soccer kind of brought the school back. You know, it's in Newark. It's in a very difficult, you know, inner city, part. And I think St. Benedict's, we kind of started to put it back on the map. And then when Claudio Reyna came along, he took it to the next level. You know, that's when St. Benedict's truly became a national power.
Talking to Todd Ramos here as we continue on. Very excited that he's the new manager here in Houston, Texas. So what a lot of people don't know is you went to North Carolina State for 4 years and you played for the Wolfpack 4 years. You know, most people might think, hey, after 2 years, you left. Talk about your college experience, because that's kind of a rarity. And then you going on to the career you had professionally.
Yeah, I mean, it's unusual now to hear of a player who plays in the World Cup who went to college for 4 years. That really happens. And I think in a way it's a good thing, because obviously that means that soccer is moving along and that the best players get signed earlier and are placed in better environments. I still feel lucky that I was able to play for George Tarantini at North Carolina State, and I was there 4 years, and that I was able to graduate, which is something that I know was really important to my parents. So my experience in college was amazing. And, you know, sometimes when you grow up as an American in this country, you know, your 4 years in college seem like they never go away. You know, the contacts and the friends that you make and the things that you do while you're in college are things that you keep with you for the rest of your life.
George Tarantini, obviously, for those listening in, was the brother of Alberto Tarantino, who I believe won a World Cup with Argentina, played in England. What type of coach was he? And do you take anything from him now that you're in the coaching side of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's rare that I go through a full week without somehow thinking about something that George Tarantini said. And only because he was a very hard coach. He was a very hard coach. He was determined. He wanted the best for you, but he made you earn it every step of the way. And there's always sometimes when I coach, sometimes I say something that reminds me of the way he said it. So I think for all of us that played at North Carolina State, we always have that little piece of George with us.
I want to take you to the New York Cosmos, because everybody who's from New Jersey, myself included, we were influenced by the New York Cosmos, the crowds, the stars. What did the Cosmos mean to you growing up?
Well, I lived basically about, you know, 5-7 miles from Giant Stadium. And so we try to go. Obviously, my family couldn't afford to go to all the games, but every once in a while, my father would splurge and get us tickets, and we'd be in the upper deck somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, the stadium was mostly full, and it was a place where I feel like I always dreamed that I could play. So for me, it was really growing up close to the stadium, wishing that one day I'd be able to play there.
So hope and possibility when you went in that stadium was there, right?
For sure. I mean, I was a kid just like kids do now, you know, that kids that attend professional games now, you always want to, someday you want to put on that jersey and you want to represent your home club.
Talking to Tom Ramos here, Santiago Formoso is a Kearney guy. Do you remember him? Because, you know, he was from Spain originally, and of course, you had the connection playing in Spain.
Of course, Santi was a superstar from our town at the time. You know, I think, if I remember correctly, I think he used to come into town driving a Corvette, you know, and we thought he was the man, you know, like one day we wanted to be like Santi. So I think he's still around the area. I haven't seen him in a couple of years now. But yeah, very important part of, you know, who we became afterwards.
Yeah, the Cosmos, something else there. Then you get into the ASL. You do your college. New Jersey Eagles, Miami Sharks, this is where it begins. And, of course, what's interesting to me as I look at you, you really bridge where the game was then to where the game is now with MLS. So those experiences, what did they mean to you playing in leagues like the ASL?
Well, they mean that I'm really old. It's really what it means, yeah. First of all. But
we won't go there.
But yeah, but after that, I would have to say that it was a great time. It was an uncertain time because we felt like we were soccer players that kind of held like a we sort of carried our little suitcase in our portfolio with us, you know. And it was like, you know, this 3 months I'm going to play for this club, and then you'd pack your bag and you go play for another club, just trying to find your way. Yeah. You know, it was not easy back then. And it wasn't until the miracle of qualifying to the 1990 World Cup that we had an opportunity to finally leave and go play somewhere.
So talk about the national team and being under contract to U.S. soccer and maybe how different that is to what it is today. But you were obviously identified as one of the top U.S. players. You went to 3 World Cups. Talk about your times with U.S. soccer as a player.
It was such great times to be part of the national team. You know, at the time we obviously didn't have the budget. You know, so it was difficult to even get into national games. But they signed us to contracts. I think our first contracts with U.S. Soccer might have been somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000 a year, and we did what we could. We were grateful that we had a contract at all, and we had somewhere to play. And U.S. Soccer did at the time the best it could, because I'm sure whatever they were paying us at the time, they didn't have. They had to go out and get it. So, but it was a great time to sort of, you know, bridge, you know, where we had been, which it was not qualifying for a World Cup for 40 years, to finally put us in the limelight of the world once again 40 years later.
We're talking to Todd Ramos. You know, the goal that always stands out to me, and I'm wondering where this sits in your history of your goals that are most memorable, was the one in Portland. Marcelo Balboa cut it back from the end line, and you came running in and buried it. Is that one of the greatest goals in your mind as far as memories are concerned?
Well, even though
because it was an important goal, too.
It was. So even though I have a bad memory, I didn't score many goals, so I can remember most of them. So that's a good thing. But that one was special because I was just coming back from a torn ACL, and that was my first game back, and I really wanted to contribute to the team somehow. And I started that game, and I think it was like somewhere around, I think maybe the 70th minute or something like that. Yeah, I think Preki, you know, did his normal cut on the sideline, chopped a couple guys up and cut the ball across the box, and Marcelo laid it back to my right foot. And then, yeah, I scored a goal, and I think it was a big one because it put us in good position in the group to qualify to the World Cup.
Absolutely. It was World Cup qualifying against Costa Rica. Talking to Tab Ramos. U.S. soccer, your coaches, you had a couple of them. What was the takeaway from some of them when it comes to your management career now, you know, the Bob Ganslers and on?
I think you always take something from every coach that you have because they're all different. Everybody thinks of the game. We all think of the game differently. And I've been very fortunate that I've had some great coaches. You know, Bora Milutinovic, I feel like although he wasn't the best tactician, I feel like he was a very deep person, and so I learned a lot from that aspect, you know, the things to do off the field and you know, how important just life is in general. I think that was important to him, to have a happy team. You know, Bob Gansler really is the one that put us on the map. You know, he's a hard coach. He wouldn't sometimes even allow you to be on the field if you weren't wearing studs. So you're talking about, you know, this is the old way of doing things. But I think, you know, I think you learn from everybody. Steve Sampson was our first, I feel, very American coach that we had. So he had that attitude about him. And then came Bruce Arena. So those are the coaches that I had on the national team that I think I learned. You know, Bruce was very confident and managed the team a certain way where he allowed you to be as professional as you wanted to be. So there was always something to learn.
Wasn't that the greatest thing that Bruce brought? Was a level of, I always thought he brought a level of confidence that we never had had.
Yeah, nothing gets to Bruce, you know. So, yeah, he brought something different. You know, it seemed like, to that point, every coach we had, it seemed like they were somehow always under the gun, you know, in a hurry. And we, you know, and Bruce was always very relaxed, and he was always more about the players and the players feeling comfortable in the environment. And I think that got the most out of players.
So that's part one of Todd Ramos. We have more to come. Before we go to break, though, Kings Court. The place to be in Edo is Kings Court, 903 Hutchins, in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. 13 monitors for all your soccer-watching desires. They cover leagues from around the world. The rooftop deck, spectacular. Great view of BBVA Stadium. British and Indian pub-style cuisine is also a winner at Kings Court. Get in there. Say hello to Jay and Megan. KingsCourtHoustonTX.com. Also, Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway. Peter Kingston. Marquee Entertainment Center, 18 TVs, big screen, home of Houston Liverpool Football Club Supporters Group. Boy, they are rolling with the good times over there at Hugh O'Connor's, 7620 Katy Freeway. Stay with us. Part two, Todd Ramos coming up. Put your hand in mine.
can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Nothing better than talking the game of soccer as we welcome you back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Hey, by the way, my friends at Advantage BMW Midtown. Now, I've driven a BMW for years. I've bought from them. I've leased from them. Numerous times. I think I'm on maybe car number five here. I have an X5 now. Love it. The other thing I love is the customer service down there. You go down there, you talk with Justin, you talk with Philip, and it's easy. Advantage BMW, they're going to cover you with sales, service, finance. They'll take you right through the whole process. And along with that, you get that ridiculous BMW customer service. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Go in there and say hello to Philip and Justin. They love soccer. They love football. Part two now of Todd Ramos.
Talking to Todd Ramos, where do you find that balance? You know, the balance of pushing people, the balance of easing off. Is that something every manager kind of figures out on their own based on the identity of their group?
And I think that's exactly right. I think the identity of the group is something you always have to consider, because I don't think you could ever go to a place and say, well, we're going to do things only my way, because your ways have to adapt to the type of people you're surrounded by, and they have to adapt to the players that you have. The personalities on players are always different. So if I had to tell you now, and that, you know, as a blank statement, you know, in general, for me, it's really important that the players are really happy off the field, that the club feels like a family, that we have a culture of being inclusive, not just between all of the staff, but the academy. Like, the door is always open. We're one club. And then the moment we step on the field, I want the players to give everything. So, you know, the training sessions won't be very long. They will be shorter, but to the point. And I want the players to always want to win when they're on the field, to do everything to win. So, and that's in practice and in the games. I feel like if you don't practice to win, it's difficult to just turn it on the weekend. So, but again, it all depends on the identity of the players that you have. I just really like being here in Houston, because I think we have, on the team, we have good people. Okay, so we have good players, but I think we also have good people. And I think they're ready to give everything to win.
Todd Ramos joining us. Figueres, second division in Spain. So this is a big move for you. You're going to a soccer-playing country, a soccer-playing nation that has depth. And you're coached by Tito Villanova, who goes on to be the Barcelona coach, which I didn't even know this. But tell me about these experiences.
So around World Cup time, you know, I was starting to get offers. We were playing international teams. Obviously, being part of the national team, being in the World Cup, you start to get offers. And I remember, you know, after the World Cup ended, I had sort of a choice to make. I had an offer from Roda in Holland that was first division. And I had Figueres, just a small club in Spain, second division. And I ended up choosing going to Spain because I felt like down the road I wanted to be in Spain anyway. I thought that was the right type of football for me. And I got very lucky, actually, because ended up going to Spain. And, you know, I played right midfield, right next to where Tito Villanova played. He was the midfielder right next to me. And we sort of started every game together for the next 2 years until he was sold to Celta Vigo, I believe, and I was sold to Betis. So we spent two full years together. He was a wonderful person and someone that you could tell was going to be a coach somewhere down the line.
You could tell? What were some of the things, just by the way he played the game, the analytical side of it?
Yeah, he played, you know, and I'm sure all of us that are involved in the game, we've played with those type of guys that play that central midfielder role that you can tell they run the show. You know, they're always giving directions, they're always helping everyone out, and he was definitely one of those
now
guys.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Tab, but you guys got promoted. You helped Betis get promoted, right, to La Liga?
Yes.
But you never got to play in La Liga because of the injury in the World Cup. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that was a really difficult time for me, because I felt like I had spent already 3.5 years in Spain, almost 4 years working really hard to get back to La Liga. You know, I paid my dues at a smaller club. We were only really 2 points away from going to La Liga with the smaller club, which was really difficult. And then I got transferred to Betis in a year when they dropped because they wanted to go back up. And I had been on second division's best 11 2 years in a row, so they wanted to build a really good team to go up. And so we finally went up with Betis. And when we went up with Betis, I had the injury at the World Cup, the elbow injury that cracked my skull. And then I was out for 6 months, so Betis didn't put me on the 22-man list because I was going to miss the next 4 months of La Liga anyway. By that time, I started to lose my position, and I felt I had a conversation with Lorenzo Serra Ferrer, who was the coach, and I said to him, "Well, what's the chances of me getting back on the team?" And he said, "Well, look, I mean, I want you on the team. But to be fair, Stosic will be in your position. He's our starter, and, you're going to be on the bench." And at the time, I was 26, 27, around that age. I felt like I was at my prime, and I felt like I wanted to go somewhere and play, and I had the opportunity to be transferred to Tigres, and that's where I went.
So how are you going to make those Rayados fans in Houston like you since you played for Tigres?
The only thing I can say is, that my time in Monterrey was amazing. And that has to do with the fact that, the city of Monterrey is very much divided into Tigres and Rayados. And it's a very tough place to be when you're at the stadium. But I can tell you that it's the nicest people in the world to be around, because Monterrey was a beautiful city to live in. And all the people there were great, regardless of what team they represented. I have to tell you that everybody off the field was wonderful to me always.
Yeah, would you think of possibilities? And we're talking to Todd Ramos, because we know every weekend they play. People drive back to Monterrey to see Tigres playing Rayados, these amazing stadiums that they're in. Maybe it's the capital of soccer in this region of the world, that city. Could there be possibilities with the Dynamo and those teams down the road?
I hope
so.
Just
in general.
I hope so, because I know what people in Monterrey think of Houston, and I know how important Houston is to the people in Monterrey, because I've been there and I've lived it. I would like to have a better relationship with the clubs down there. I think that's important, and my son is born in Monterrey, so I feel like I will always have part of Monterrey with me.
Speaking of Todd Ramos, all right, 95, MLS is starting. In 96, the first guy signed by the league is the one and only Todd Ramos of the Metro Stars. Do you remember the night, I think you went down to the Palladium to unveil the new jerseys?
I do.
In New York City.
And I've seen that picture so many times.
How about those jerseys? Those are the best.
It was, the funny part is we all went in the back to change and put on our jerseys. And I had already seen the Metro Stars jersey because I had to do some pictures. And my first pictures with the Metro Stars jersey in MLS were actually at El Volcan in Monterrey, because I was going to leave after the season to go play, and I took my first picture. So if you can see, my first pictures with those jerseys are actually at Tigres, which was...
Stars, I love that. Tigres, MLS forever
they do.
Linked.
That's right, that's right. So the first MLS pictures were actually taken in El Volcan, which was so awesome. And then we showed up at the in New York, as you said, at the Palladium for the pictures, and then that's the first time I get an opportunity to see all the other jerseys. And then you see, it's a mess of colors, and, it was crazy, but it was exciting, and I was happy to be part of the beginning of something that, look where we are today, sitting here at Houston's beautiful training facility, and none of this would have happened if we didn't start at some point. So.
Talking to Todd Ramos, by the way, not everybody gets to be the first guy ever signed by a pro league, so think about that for a second.
Yeah, it was unusual, actually, because, when I got signed by MLS, they didn't even have names of teams. Mm-hmm. So I signed and I said, "Well, I'm from New Jersey. Can I be in my local team?" And they said, "Well, you have to choose two. We're not sure if we can give you that one, but one of two." And I said, "Okay, well, can I be in New Jersey or in D.C.? My wife was from D.C. and I thought, maybe this is, I'd like to stay on the East Coast. So I said, okay. And then I ended up, at Metro Star. So that was great.
Speaking of Todd Ramos, how about your years under Jurgen as an assistant? Because Jurgen, had this little shaman-like quality to him, to the public, very different. But what were the takeaways from Jurgen Klinsmann, who, like you, was such an outstanding soccer player?
I learned so much from Jurgen. And by the way, when our national team had Jurgen, it seemed like we were this huge operation that traveled around the world. And and where doors were open to us everywhere because of Jurgen. Wow. I feel like he was an amazing manager. And for me, a lot of, you know, I've learned a lot from the way he managed the operation that it is to actually run a team, not just the actual tactics on the field.
So I look at you, Tab, and I say, wow, here's a guy that checks all the boxes. This is the kind of guy that MLS should be hiring. You've done it at the youth level all the way up. Is that a prerequisite in your mind? I know it doesn't always work like that for every coach, but the amount of differing experiences at differing levels that you have had has just amassed this incredible book of experience.
I think ideally you always want to have people on your books that have the most experience possible. I think that's a great thing. But I also think that the league has been evolving. And maybe MLS is at the point now where the, you know, player, former player graduating directly into the bench of an MLS team. I think those days are ending slowly. But I think they were necessary to get the league to where it is today. I think it's pretty clear that moving forward, the league wants coaches on the sideline who are educated in coaching rather than just having been a player.
Omid Namazi, he's basically your right-hand man. Will we call him your right-hand man? Because we know he's a talented coach. I don't know him personally, but I've been told by a lot of people he's a very talented coach.
For sure, you would call him my right-hand man, and with all the respect to Pablo, because Pablo has been obviously so huge.
By the way, you remind me, he went to North Carolina State also.
That's right. And so, so we're fellow Wolfpack. Omid has so much experience. He's coached in the U.S. at every single level of the game. He's coached in every league. And for me, the right person to always bounce ideas off. And the one person that's always going to tell me, no, let's not do that. Let's do something else. And that really pushes the limits for me. So I think he's the perfect right-hand man.
Speaking of Tom Ramos, last question. We really thank you for all your time here. I think the fans are really going to appreciate the insight from you in this interview. What will the Dynamo team, in your vision, look like in 2020 when it's playing?
Right. So I think as a coach, you always have the idea, because it's easy to sit in the office and put the team together and say, hey, we're going to play this way and it's going to look this way. And then comes the reality of actually playing the games, because now you have to see how it develops. You have to see how players react to the way you want to play and what players fit into the way you want to play and which ones end up not fitting into the way you want to play. So I think it's a process. But if I had a guess going into the summer, what I'd like to see is a happy team on the field that's always attacking, a team that's not afraid to go forward, a team that's not afraid after it scores a goal to only worry about scoring another one rather than defending the one you have. Having said that, as I've done in my past coaching, sometimes, you know, it's 5-10 minutes left in the game and you have to shut it down because you have to get a result. There'd be times where we have to shut it down and get a result because that's just the way, you know, this is about winning games. But I'm hoping that the players are happy playing in a style which will allow them to be free.
Tab, we thank you. We welcome you to Houston. It's good to have a little more New Jersey down here as well. And thank you very much
for your time
today.
Okay, thank you.
So that was the Tab Ramos interview. We hope you enjoyed that. We hope you learned a little bit more about your manager, and really looking forward to his leadership here in Houston and the way he will deal with the media as well and help to grow the game here. It is exciting times. Hey, by the way, Cube 57 this year has been the home of your Houston Dynamo. Eddie Robinson, Cindy Bourbano, Bobby Boswell. We all enjoyed bringing the Dynamo games to you, and we're proud to provide the commentary for the Houston Dynamo on Cube 57. All right, we're going to take a break. We have more to come as we roll on here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Don't forget the podcasts of this show, podcastarena.com and on iTunes. I'm a racing car.
Sam Windsor with the Houston Sabercats here. Even when I'm down under, I'm listening to ESPN 97.5 on the app. You can stream the boys from anywhere. Mate.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
Let's wrap things up here tonight. Before we do, Tri-Eagle Energy. If you're shopping for electricity rates, it can be painful. We know that. Tri-Eagle Energy makes it easy for you. They're born and raised in Texas company that provides simple fixed rates. You're going to pay the same rate no matter how much or little electricity you use. So there's no hidden fees. It's easy. It's fast. There's no gimmicks, no surprises on your bill. Each week, you're going to receive a weekly usage update so that you already have an estimate for your energy charges before your bill hits the mail. You can lock in your rate for 12, 24, 36 months. That way, you avoid rate hikes. So lock it in now. Tri-Eagle Energy. They keep it simple. The rate you see is the rate you pay. No gimmicks, no minimum usage fees, no charges if you go over a certain amount of electricity. Now, they're also offering a discount for our listeners. Simply use promo code ESPN when you sign up. Don't wait. What are you waiting for? It's an easy decision, and you can feel good about it. Call them at 877-93-EAGLE or visit TriEagleEnergy.com. That's TriEagleEnergy.com. Promo code ESPN, PUCT, hashtag 10064. All right, time now for our final guest, Josh Babetsky of the Austin Anthem and a growing supporters group in Austin, Texas. Josh, thank you so much, as always, for coming on the show. And you just revealed to me you were formerly with the Sons of Ben in Philadelphia.
I was for a very long time. I was living outside of the Philadelphia area when they were announced as an expansion team, and it was a good opportunity to get on the bandwagon, and that's actually was my introduction to MLS and MLS supporter culture and kind of seeing what the Sons of Ben pulled off as, you know, attracting not only the league but an ownership, the league defined an ownership group to the Philadelphia market. You know, it was just kind of an amazing story, and I was glad to be a small part of it.
And your ideas, how did you birth the idea of really organizing this and getting this moving? I mean, does that just happen one day you're walking down the street and, you know, you're like, hey, you know, we need to begin to recreate, and build a supporters culture here ahead of 2021 when Austin FC gets in?
Well, I mean, it started further back than that. Prior to this, I was living in New York City. And when my family and I decided to relocate, you know, we were looking for areas to kind of live long term. Austin was always on the short list. I'd spent a lot of time here. My then girlfriend, now wife, did as well. And, you know, having become such a rapid soccer fan and kind of crash course late in life in the soccer culture, you know, one of the things you're looking at, along with like the price of house and culture and are there good restaurants and arts, you know, was what did the soccer scene look like? And even from afar, you know, it looked like there was just a lot of untapped potential here. And you know, it seemed like a market to come to and help maybe grow that rather than like just get plugged into a market that maybe already had a team. So while it wasn't the deciding factor, it was certainly something I looked at. And then when I got here to Austin, I just very quickly tried to get connected with all the various soccer groups and teams I could find, the Aztecs and the supporters there and the various EPL supporters group. And I got to know the then owners of the Aztecs franchise and got very involved with the local American Outlaws chapter, which then I wound up running a couple of years later. So I just kind of jumped in with both feet. And, you know, the thing I saw was there was an amazing soccer culture here in Austin, but it was very fragmented. It was very segmented along the lines of what league, what team, are you a Liga MX fan? Or so I saw the opportunity there of like, okay, well, how do you coalesce this together? So you need to do two things. How do you organize soccer supporter culture that's already here in town and kind of unify that and give it, you know, there's no gravity pulling it all together like you would in a market with a major league team. And then how do you also show the rest of the world what a great soccer market it is? And it seems like a foregone conclusion in 2019, you know, tops of Women's World Cup ratings, one of the top 10 EPL markets, you know, highly popular Liga MX market, you know, and obviously just breaking records in our road up to our MLS team taking the field in 2021. But back in 2013, when I was trying to, or 2014, you know, really, trying to get this up and running, it was kind of a, well, I'm new in town and it's a good way to meet people at a minimum, but yeah. Wound up, you know, kind of becoming this slow rolling movement that just, you know, kind of kept picking up steam and speed as the years went on.
Josh Babetsky joining us of the Austin Anthem. And then of course, once the MLS team is announced, which was a great announcement, then obviously I'm sure things accelerated and you're able to connect with people even more. And even on, like, you know, yesterday's announcement about a new training facility for $45 million that's going to be put in place, top class for Austin FC. Every one of these sort of momentous big moments now as we head towards 2021, it must be a cause for celebration for you and the supporters.
Yeah, I mean, every little milestone along the way, every city council vote that went our way, every public community hearing, every little whisper of, you know, forward momentum, you know, would cause an immediate, you know, spike in interest. And more for just all of the people that had jumped on the bandwagon early. You know, this, I keep telling people, this could have gone another way. Like, you know, and then we would have just looked like a bunch of crazy tinfoil hat wearing soccer fans. But, you know, the stars aligned. I think a lot of our efforts had a lot to do. Well, I don't think it was all luck, but you certainly got to factor in things could have worked out differently. But, you know, it was a great morale booster for those people, the early adopters, the people who really believed early, that jumped in to say, you know, I want this too. I will follow this cause. I will support this non-existent team into existence. I think really those are the people that really are, you know, it resonated most with. But yeah, certainly watching our membership numbers, you know, spike every time there was a new press release didn't hurt either.
Josh Babeski joining us. Josh, what personally is it for you? I mean, obviously, I know you love the game. I know you're passionate about it. But look, this is time consuming. You're probably doing more work than people really know to keep sort of accelerating this and putting people together. These are all things that nobody ever knows about. Tell me about the personal side of it for you.
I mean, it's a role that's kind of evolved every year. I mean, it started off as literally just myself and a Twitter account was like day one. You know, building up steam. I started a project called Supporters Union, which was basically a wiki of all Austin soccer things to try and help, you know, coordinate people around it. You know, so it's been a labor of love that's taken many forms. These days, we have a very strong team of about 40-some individuals that all lead part of the organization. So the load is quite a bit spread, but it still seems like there's tons of work ahead of us. And, you know, we just kind of focus on the road ahead. For myself, it's just been, you know, vindicating and kind of this idea had legs, had momentum. You know, articles I wrote speculating, you know, how we might get a team turned out to have a lot of truth to it. You know, it's really nice when you kind of go from, you know, am I just tilting at windmills to, you know, actually, you know, finding out that, you know, this a lot of this has happened because of that time and effort. So, you know, I just feel great at the community that we've built. And just excited, you know, at the prospect of the future. I mean, we're still a year plus out from, you know, the team kicking a ball. And it's just amazing all the relationships and the community building, the good for the community we've done, and the momentum that this, you know, building a supporters group has brought Austin.
Boy, I think you're going to gain some huge benefits for being really ahead of this. I really do. I think you're sinking some incredible roots here. And I know you have a good relationship with Austin FC and Andy Lochnane, and you are working together to build this as well, correct?
Well, I mean, I think it's amazing what we've learned about the relationships certain supporters groups in MLS have with their front offices. You know, some of them are cordial, some of them are aside, some of them are downright adversarial. And I don't think that's helpful. I mean, our goals were to bring soccer here. Their goal was to bring it here as part of running their business and part of being part of the league and a market that MLS really wanted to be in, our role as fans. So, yeah, I think it's been great that we have a great working relationship and we have that ability to kind of coordinate and, you know, kind of build these things together. You know, I think they involve us probably a lot more than they probably need to. But I think that's just also showing the club's commitment to the community and being involved and working with the community. And obviously, you know, we kind of represent that single largest constituency of that fan base that they're trying to serve.
And Josh, the Austin Anthem, there's all the subgroups underneath it, right? Can you name some of those?
Well, I mean, we kind of consider them less subgroups and more just interests. The goal of Austin Anthem, and we really don't prefix it with a "the," but it's just Austin Anthem, is to have this big tent. Austin is very representative of many different kinds of individuals, of different backgrounds, of different interests, of different languages, of different cultures, of different loves. And we wanted to make sure what we were building it represented that. So what we have is less so groups, but more so we call them interests. And that is to make sure we have point people that are looking out to making sure we're not accidentally marginalizing or overlooking a part of the population that, you know, has the potential to be great soccer fans and soccer supporters. A lot of supporters groups are very tightly focused on a thing. You know, they have a mission. Their brand represents, you know, maybe ultras or, you know, a certain demographic. But our goal is to be the big tent. So we have, we have a director of LGBTQ. We have a director of women's engagement. We have a director of Latinx. We have our MRGA, the Zenate Musical Collective, that represents our musical interests. And then we have a chapter in New Braunfels. And then actually we just launched a Longhorn chapter. So the University of Texas now will have its own Austin Anthem chapter for students to get involved into making sure we're taking into consideration the unique needs and interests of UT students.
Very awesome. It just sounds so exciting, and it just sounds wonderfully inclusive, and that's what it's got to be, and there's no question about it. And I would assume it's sort of like the Timbers Army in Portland, right? The same type of thing with the big umbrella.
Yeah. I mean, different clubs have different organizations. Sometimes it's a bunch of individual independent supporters group that kind of operate under one umbrella. The 3252 in LA is a good example of that. And then just some of them have just been around that have that size and mass where they kind of do have a bigger tent under them. I'd like to think what we're doing is working and being pretty effective, considering, you know, we already have a membership that's larger than a lot of active MLS SGs. And we're, again, about over a year away from kicking a ball. So our goal over the next year is to continue to grow and, get more people on board and excited about soccer coming to Austin and cheering in our section. You know, our supporter section represents just under 15% of the total stadium capacity. So we've absolutely feel that obligation to not only fill that section, but to really set the tone and set the atmosphere within the entire building.
Josh Babetsky joining us with the Austin Anthem. With all those other interests underneath the big umbrella, how do you have sort of meetings to keep everybody informed and to plot out your plan and how you do things? I mean, do you have regular meetings?
Yeah. Actually, you know, sometimes they're just ad hoc. Our day-to-day philosophy, honestly, we use Slack. we have a bunch of tools that startup businesses would use, and we leverage them pretty heavily in order to keep membership, coordinated, making sure each of those interests and groups, because there's whole teams behind each of these as well, and most people are involved with more than one, but kind of keeping that communication. So we have an events team. We have an art and brand team that will, you know, work on artwork, like all the graphics you see on our social are put together by, a couple of people. All that. We run a mid-sized business. Just we have no revenue other than memberships. So it wouldn't be a good capitalist business model. But as far as a 501c3, nonprofit, I mean, we're running a pretty decent-sized business with, let's say 50 some employees and a couple thousand customers being our members who, our goal is to serve and making sure they have the best match day experience and best experiences being a member.
Pretty incredible. Congratulations. Listen, this is great work. You do have a holiday party coming up on December 7th at the Haymaker. You just did the MLS Cup party with Austin FC this past weekend. And just give us the information where those in Austin and surrounding areas can sign up and be a part of this.
Yeah, everybody is welcome to join us and help us grow this great organization to support this great team that's coming. You can find us at austinanthem.org. You can also find us at Austin Anthem on all the social networks and at fmnodeaustin.org. .org for our Spanish language media, which all of our content is also available in Spanish.
Josh, thank you so much for coming on the program. We appreciate it. What a tremendous update. Things are exciting. What you guys have done prior to the arrival of Austin FC on the field in 2021, pretty remarkable. Thank you very much for your time tonight.
I appreciate you coming out, and hope to see you at our holiday party December 7th at Haymaker at 6 o'clock. We also use that as a Toys for Tots fundraiser. So if you bring toys, you get a raffle ticket, and we'll have some great giveaways.
Sounds like a deal. Thank you, Josh, for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Glenn.
So that'll do it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. A lot of people go to the podcast, podcastarena.com. Also, you can catch it on iTunes. So we ended up in a big way with the supporters culture and Josh Babetsky. A big thank you to him up in Austin, Texas. For Andrew Carlson, Victor Ariza, I'm Glenn Davis. Don't forget, Soccer Matters until next Tuesday.
ESPN 97.5.